Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as you would say in Italy, regardless of what language you do or you don't speak, welcome on in to the 94th episode of the Calcioland Podcast. As you can already tell, I am not David Amoyal. I am his side host slash producer, Alex Goldberg. David is not with us today, but then again, he's always with us, at least in spirit. And David and I just figured you, our listeners, are so supportive, so interactive, so kind with your comments and reviews. And every time you talk to us on Twitter asking us about our upcoming episodes or our previous episodes, that we couldn't let you down. We had to give you a Calcioland episode today. So that is what we will do. We have a tweaked version of the Calcioland podcast today, but there will be an interview. I am very excited to chat with Dean Jones of Bleacher Report, who is a very knowledgeable man on the whole sport of football. I think after listening to the interview, you'll realize just how knowledgeable he is, covering a wide variety of topics. But before we get to the interview, we do have a winners and losers segment. We're going to save Twitter questions for when David is back, as he is obviously more knowledgeable to answer those questions than I am. We're not going to do our normal top of the podcast segment where David pitches a question to me and I pitch it back. I clearly have no one to pitch it to. And although I do talk to myself, I don't feel like doing it so publicly today. But like I said, we are going to do winners and losers. And that is proving that David is still with us, even when he's not. Because he sent me late last night his winners and losers from the weekend in Serie A. And I will read them to you. I'll give my own takes on them. But boy, does that prove this man never stops working. So I'll be very happy to facilitate his winners and losers for this episode. So without further ado, let's get to it, shall we? Let's start with our first winner. Our first winner is Roma, who had a big 3-0 win on Friday against Torino. And they're especially a winner with Lazio and Inter both drawing. Roma are now in third place. They're 3 points ahead of Lazio. And even better for them, the ninja, Raja Nainggolan, who's had a rough season. He had 2 assists in this game. So maybe he can finish strong down the stretch. Roma would certainly benefit from that. He might be the biggest difference from Roma last season to Roma this season. He's almost a shell of himself this season. We've talked about it many times on the podcast, but he also may have some individual motivation because last time Belgium, his national team, got together, Roberto Martinez left them off the squad. So maybe he feels like he has something to prove with the World Cup coming up in June. Whatever the case may be, if Roma can get some strong performances from the ninja, it could really help them qualify for Champions League next year and could also help them in the Champions League this year. So Roma's our first winner. The next winners, we're going to scroll down the Serie A table four. We got Hellas Verona, who won against Chievo, and Spal, who drew at Sassuolo, both making progress in the relegation race. It was especially important because Chievo and Sassuolo are also in the relegation race, and they're slightly ahead of Verona and Spal. So very good results there for Verona and Spal. Another winner who's also in the relegation battle is manager Walter Zenga, who led Crotone to a big 4-1 win against his former team Sampdoria. That's got to feel really good for Walter Zenga. Always nice to win against your former club, especially when you win 4-1 and your former club happens to be 20 points ahead of you. Very well done to Crotone and Walter Zenga. And maybe our most important winner is Fiorentina, who won their first match after Davide Astori's death with a goal by his replacement, no less, Vitor Hugo. There were really a lot of touching tributes this weekend for Astori, especially in the Fiorentina game before, during, and after the match. But what was really touching was Vitor Hugo saluting a shirt of Davide Astori after he scored. So after a really tough week for Fiorentina and all of Serie A and Italy, that was nice to see. So for our next winner, we'll move to the top of the table, and the very top of the table, Juventus were a massive winner this weekend as they took the lead in the standings with a 2-0 win against Udinese yesterday. They are now up 1 point on Napoli with a game in hand, and they can extend it to 4 points once they make up their match against Atalanta on Wednesday. And to really drill home how good a form they are in, they have 8 straight clean sheets in Serie A right now. They haven't conceded a goal in Serie A since December 30th, okay? They have not conceded a Serie A goal in 2018. and their aggregate in Serie A since then is 17-0. 17-0. And to take it a step further, their aggregate in Serie A since November 19th is 28-1. 28-1. The old lady is in fine, fine form. And let's move to some individual winners now. Let's stay on Juventus. How about Paulo Dybala? What an 8 days for Paulo Dybala. He had 2 goals yesterday. Of course, he started off this 8-day span with a last gasp winner against Lazio, which was huge for the title race. Then he had the winner in the Champions League against Tottenham to move Juve on to the next round. As I said, he had a brace yesterday, could have had a hat trick because he drew a penalty that he then gave to Gonzalo Higuain, who missed. But he was majestic yesterday. His free kick goal was a golazo, an absolute beauty of a free kick. And then the second goal, he scores with the right foot. What can he not do? But honestly, it's hard not to at least be reminded of Messi when Dybala plays like that, especially his free kick. He's in incredible form. As good as he was at the start of the season, he might be better now because all of these goals that he's scoring are huge. They're crucial. They're clutch. They are so important for Juventus' season in Serie A and the Champions League. He is becoming a true Juve hero. So Dybala is our first individual winner. Our next individual winner is Ciro Immobile, who had an absolutely ridiculous goal. Ridiculous. Probably the goal of the season in Serie A, and probably the goal of the season in all of Europe. A scorpion kick from pretty deep, almost the top of the 18. I can think of Olivier Giroud's scorpion kick recently, Henrik Mkhitaryan's, but they were closer to net. This one was from a pretty good distance. He absolutely meant it. It gives him a big lead in the golden boot race in Serie A. He's got 24 goals. Second place is Icardi with 18. So barring something very unexpected, Ciro Immobile should get the golden boot. What a striker he's turned into. And while we're on strikers, Andre Silva makes the winner's list. He gets his first goal in Serie A. He opened his account. He gave Milan a crucial win. This goal was in the dying embers of the game. Milan gets the 3 points on the road. They now have a 3-point lead on Sampdoria. So at least they're looking good for Europa League. But they still have an outside chance at the Champions League. But nonetheless, congratulations to Andre Silva. Hopefully this can turn it around for him at Milan. And our last winner is Milan Skriniar, who was beastly against Napoli. Definitely the man of the match. Was far and wide the best player on the pitch. He completely shut down Dries Mertens and Lorenzo Insigne, which obviously is not easy. When we had Steven Gonsalves on the podcast just a couple weeks ago, David asked him at the very beginning of the interview who some of the most impressive U23 prospects have been in Serie A. The first person Steven mentioned was Milan Skriniar. He's been sensational all season for Inter, and it definitely would be a big hit if Inter had to part ways with him this summer. You never want to let go of a good young center back. But if they have to, I would imagine they'd get quite a nice return for Milan Skriniar, as all the top clubs will come a-knocking. So those are our winners. Congratulations to everyone who made the list. But now we have to tend to our losers. There's not many losers, but we have to start off with Chievo, Sassuolo, and Cagliari, who are right back in the thick of the race to avoid relegation. Chievo, of course, is on the other side of Hellas Verona being our winner. Chievo could have given themselves a little separation with a win, but instead they are fully back in the thick of the relegation crowd. They're currently in 15th, but only 3 points ahead of Hellas Verona, who are 19th. So anything could happen between now and the end of the season. Sassuolo, of course, couldn't win at home to Spal. They haven't won in quite a while. And Cagliari drew 2-2 to Lazio at home, which on the surface isn't that bad considering how good Lazio is, but they conceded that goal to Ciro Immobile at the very end of the game. So that would have been a big 3 points that they didn't get. Our last two losers, Inter and Napoli, they drew to each other, a draw that helps neither team. Not great for Inter as they are now sitting in fifth, right outside the Champions League, albeit they do have a game in hand on Roma and Lazio, who are ahead of them. But with Roma winning 3-0, not a great weekend for Inter. And Napoli definitely come away disappointed, as they are truly behind Juventus now. They could be down as many as 4 if Juventus win midweek to Atalanta. And as I mentioned, we're not going to do Twitter questions today, but I am going to do one that was asked to me this morning because it ties in really well with Napoli being in the loser category. So David tweeted this morning, quote, Many point to Napoli's decision to focus on Serie A at the expense of European competitions as a mistake. I think their inability to make significant moves in January is what they'll ultimately regret from this season. So Ramon Varela quoted the tweet and asked me, one, regarding the tweet below, might the former have influenced the latter, combining into a type of vicious cycle? I'll explain what I think he means by that in a second. The second part of the question was, after Sarri's press conference, can we say the annual Napoli meltdown is underway? So I believe in the first question he's asking, because Napoli decided they were only focused on Serie A, did that result in them not making moves in January? And my answer is, maybe they are related, but it's not like all the other Serie A teams made a bunch of moves in January. Serie A was rather inactive with transfer moves, so I don't think they looked around and just said, well, they can make all these moves, we're only focusing on Serie A, so we won't make any moves. And also, they did know that Sarri has a very rigid rotation, so he really needs to have a lot of trust in his players anyway in order to play them extensively. But I do agree with David that it's still something you can point to. If they had just beefed up the squad, even if they're not impressive players, that could have helped them late in games to rest players, especially if they're up big. They certainly could have rested more players in competitions like the Europa League. And we point to how deep Juventus is, so you can't tell me that Napoli becoming deeper would be anything but a good thing. And regarding the second question, Sarri certainly came off the handles a bit in his press conference, making a not-so-nice comment towards a female reporter. And yes, this could be a Napoli meltdown here, but I wouldn't say it's totally over. Juve still have some big games to play in Serie A, and they also play Napoli in April, so a lot could change there if Napoli were to win. And don't forget, Juventus is still in the Champions League, so they can't be as fresh. They'll have to play midweek at some point. They're going to have to still rotate their players. So it's definitely not over. But if Juventus do win the Scudetto, you could definitely point to the press conference yesterday and anything that happened in the last 8 days as why and how Napoli faltered. So those are our winners and losers for this episode. I hope I did a decent job at facilitating them to you from David. Very thankful that David sent them my way so I could give you more than just an interview. But with that said, I am very happy to get to the interview portion of the podcast with the fantastic Dean Jones. All right, and for the interview portion of the podcast, I am very honored and happy to be joined by Dean Jones, who works for the very popular site Bleacher Report. He writes on a lot of different subjects in the sport of football, covering transfers and tactics. So, Dean, I am so honored to have you join me today. Welcome aboard Calcioland.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. My pleasure. So, Dean, because this is an Italian-based podcast, I wanted to start in Serie A, and I wanted to start by asking you about a young Serie A starlet that you recently wrote about for Bleacher Report. Roma has definitely had an up-and-down season, and they have a lot of older players. We've even talked on the podcast about how after this season they might need to go out with the old and in with the young. But definitely one common excitement for Roma fans has been Cengiz Under. And compared to a lot of prospects, he's had a rather unique journey to a top club. Tell the listeners how he came to Roma and the importance of technical director Monchi in the process.
Yeah, I mean, Under has taken a very careful route to the top, really. He started off in a small town in Turkey called Sindigi, and he has worked his way up. You know, he hasn't been at the glamour clubs in Turkey, the likes of Galatasaray or Besiktas or Fenerbahce. He's played for smaller clubs. And in his hometown, you know, a lot of kids go unnoticed, really. But he was lucky in that he was spotted by a scout and at the age of 10 was moved to a more metropolitan city and was able to move his game forwards where a lot of kids of that age aren't able to do so. And what his representatives have done throughout his career is just really carefully pick which clubs he's going to go to. And basically, they've picked clubs whereby he's going to get games. They didn't want him to go to a bigger club and just sit back and watch the first team and just play a bit part here and there. They wanted him involved. So, you know, while he was in Turkey, he was playing for clubs that are basically not glamorous, but he made a big impact, particularly in his last season, and it earned him a move to Roma. Now, the reason he chose Roma, as you mentioned, Monchi is the guy that was the secret behind Sevilla's success. He's known as a bit of a transfer wizard. He is very good at not just spotting talent, but getting players in on not a lot of money, really. He signs players for quite cheap fees and then manages to offload them for quite significant value later on once they've proved themselves. He done that at Sevilla, and he's now doing the same thing at Roma. And he basically convinced Cengiz Under to make his name at Roma. He convinced him that he would get playing time. He told him he wouldn't be there just to sit back and learn and slowly feel his way in. He was told that he would be in there from the start and have the opportunity to play. Obviously, it took him a few months because you can't just walk into a country like Italy and Serie A and really get going from the off when you're a young player, you've come in from Turkey. So Roma were very good about managing him as well and giving him some careful game time in the first few months. But it was no coincidence when he exploded onto the scene and started scoring goals. He's fantastic to watch. I love to watch him for Roma. I make a point of watching him now basically just because I want to see him and how he's progressing. Interesting to see how he will do in the Champions League and whether he gets to progress any further this season. If he doesn't, then I know we'll be seeing him in future years. I think his name is one that we're going to be speaking of for years to come. And, you know, hopefully he does just continue to manage his career as carefully as he has done up to this point.
Yeah, he's looked so bright lately. And as you said, it looks like Roma really did a smooth job of integrating him. And Dean, as a follow-up, I know future transfers are really hard to predict, especially years from now, but writing about him and knowing about him a little bit, do you think Under has the makeup and the personality to want to stay at Roma for a long time?
Yeah, I think that, you know, from speaking to people that I spoke to for a feature that I wrote for him a couple of weeks ago, it sounds like, you know, he's got absolutely no intention of leaving for some time. You know, whether that's 2 years, 3 years or 4 years, we'll have to wait and see. It will depend what kind of impact he makes. But what's important is that he's not just going to jump at the chance to join a bigger club just because they are a bigger club. You know, Man City, we're already looking at him before this move to Roma, and he didn't choose to go there. Real Madrid and Barcelona, I'm told, already have him on their radar and as somebody that they need to monitor with a view to how he progresses in his career. So there is going to come the opportunity to join a bigger side at some stage if he continues in this kind of form. But I wouldn't be panicking if I was a Roma fan. I think he's there to stay for, you know, at least the next couple of seasons.
Mm. As a Chelsea fan, pause off, Manchester City. You have enough talent. So, Dean, before we transition to the Premier League, I wanted to ask you about one of the top strikers in the world. You wrote an article last week on Robert Lewandowski, the star striker for Bayern, and rumblings that this could be his last year at Bayern. So it seems his name always is at least mentioned during or leading up to windows, but what may make this time different and who could be some potential suitors for Lewandowski?
Yeah, I mean, Lewandowski's had such a good career at Dortmund and Bayern Munich that there's definitely a temptation for him to just stay in Bundesliga and continue to score goals and be successful there. But there's also that temptation now as he approaches 30 years of age to make one final move. And I think that the fact he's taken on a new agent recently, he's taken on Pini Zahavi, who is renowned for being a super agent who manages to get big players out of their clubs, even when the clubs don't want them to go. It could be significant. Lewandowski said it's not significant. He says that that is not the reason that he's changed agent at this stage, but we'll have to wait and see on that one, because once it comes to the summer, I think that there are going to be clubs that test the water to see whether Lewandowski's head can be turned, to see whether Bayern would sell. I mean, Bayern, they don't want to sell. It's as simple as that. Of course, they don't want him to lose a player like that. It's going to take a lot of money to get him out the door. I was told that, you know, Real Madrid, as we know, have been linked with this player for probably 2 or 3 years now. It's somewhat surprising he hasn't actually gone there before now, but Benzema's just managed to hang on. I'd say Real Madrid and Chelsea are the front runners right now. Chelsea might come as a surprise given the season that they're having, but I think it's more to do with the fact that Chelsea are again looking to transition next season. They're not going to have this same squad. They won't have the same manager, and they're going to be looking to make some big changes. Now, Alvaro Morata, will he have a future? They will have to wait and see. He wants to prove himself there, I'm told, so he's going to have to try and do that. Olivier Giroud's gone in there, but, you know, either of those players aren't close to what Robert Lewandowski's doing at the moment. So it's certainly one to keep an eye on. There's still obviously a chance he decides to stay with Bayern. But I think for the first time, we got a chance to perhaps see him try himself in La Liga or the Premier League.
Very interesting. And, you know, I'm ordering the questions like this because you do mention that maybe Chelsea at least has an outside chance at Lewandowski. And This has had me thinking for a couple weeks now. Because, Dean, Manchester City has been so dominant this year, it honestly has me wondering if it's good for the league long term. Is there a chance that it actually affects the transfer market this summer and stars looking to leave their clubs will look away from the Premier League? And as you said, Real Madrid are looking to make changes and PSG probably will have a big overhaul or at least a couple important players. So is it possible stars will look to those teams and almost be afraid of going to the Premier League if it's not Manchester City? Because honestly, I think Manchester City is a shoo-in to win next year. So do you think that's good for the league and could it affect transfers?
We don't know how long City can dominate for at the moment. You know, they're dominating this season, but they haven't won it the last couple of years. So it's not the kind of dominance we've seen before with Manchester United. You know, we're a long way from that. And you know, a big part of what's going on at the moment is down to Pep Guardiola completely transforming them. So it also depends on him extending his contract at the club, which talks seem to be going on right now about him doing that. If he does stay, then yeah, there's the chance that City do dominate for years to come. But football goes in cycles, and the Premier League, in recent years anyway, hasn't really had a club that's completely dominated. You know, you'd say United are the ones that have really set the bar for how you do that. I still think players will come to the Premier League purely because there's so much money to be had. You know, that's one thing that people say Lewandowski won't move for the money. Well, he probably would actually when he finds out, you know, that people like Mesut Ozil are earning over £300,000 a week, things like that. It probably does make him wonder, hang on a second, how much money could I earn in these final few years of my career if I go and play a Premier League club, even if it's not Man City? Listen, Man City might even end up signing Lewandowski yet. Who knows? But, you know, Man City obviously are the team to beat right now. I agree with you. They'll probably get even stronger next year and win the league again. But beyond that, it really does depend on what Guardiola decides to do.
Fair enough. So speaking of potential summer moves, this has been a very popular topic for a long time now. But do you think this is finally the summer that Arsene Wenger is out at Arsenal? And if not, what will it take for Arsenal to finally part ways with him?
I wrote a piece on this as well recently. Obviously, I write it every season for about the last 6 years, I think. look, Wenger, for the first time, I guess the ball's not in his court as to whether he stays unless he wins the Europa League. If he wins the Europa League this season, then Wenger remains as Arsenal manager for next year. If he doesn't, then I think Arsenal really do have to consider who they bring in next. The big problem for Arsenal is they're not really sure who to turn to next. There's not a concrete plan in place, somebody they know is guaranteed to come in and shake up the football club. There isn't somebody like Pep Guardiola that they can say, okay, come in on a 3 or 4 year contract, take your time in the first year, make small steps, and in the second year, let's really kick on. There's just not somebody that's primed to come in, and there aren't many people in world football that you could count on to make that happen either. So that's what Wenger's got in his favour right now. He knows that Arsenal are going to struggle to replace him because there is no guarantee of success. Obviously, he's not been particularly successful in recent years, but he does seem to find a way each year of just about doing enough. So, you know, look, he's obviously in a good position against AC Milan right now. I think if he'd have lost that first leg and was going into this game, then there would be real pressure on him. But he can probably be a little more relaxed about that. See if Arsenal can see out that second leg. It won't be easy, but I think they will do it. And then, basically, they've got to put that competition top of their priority list because, you know, Wenger was playing the competition down earlier in the season. He knows now that it's everything to him. You know, domestically, the Premier League is just not proving particularly worthwhile for him at the moment. Obviously, he can't afford to do too badly there, but they're not going to be winning any prizes. Certainly the Europa League is where it's all about.
Yeah. You had a great tweet the other week saying, isn't 22 years at any job too long? And, you know, I think you're right.
I got a few tweets back from people who have been in their job for that long and saying they were offended, but hopefully they were all a bit tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, nowadays, you tweet anything, someone's going to be offended. But
exactly. Yeah,
I like true. It. All right, Dean, let's talk about one of the most polarizing players in all of football, who you also recently wrote about for Bleacher Report, and that is Paul Pogba. I truly feel one of the most common mistakes that fans make is to grade a midfielder, especially a central midfielder, based on their goal and assist tallies. It's even done with Eden Hazard, who obviously plays more forward than Pogba. But what's your opinion on Pogba's time at Manchester United so far? Has it been as bad as some fans say it has?
No, it hasn't been a disaster. I know that people like to dress it up like that. That's mainly due to his price tag. You know, when you arrive as an £89 million signing, of course you've got expectations, and to a certain extent you do have to live up to that price tag. Pogba, you know, in parts has been unplayable. There have been matches where he's been sensational. There have been matches where he's been very good. Then, of course, there are matches where he's gone missing. And it's when he goes missing that you see headlines about him, basically, because people expect him to dominate matches. They don't expect him to go missing. But, you know, Pogba's big problem, obviously, has been fitting into this United lineup. Speaking to people that are more in tune with what's going on at United and around Pogba right now, I'm told Pogba does want that more freedom. He does want to be able to drift around a bit more and find the space and find the holes to cause problems and not have to always be looking over his shoulder and worry about what's going on behind him. But you know, you're in a modern day Jose Mourinho team. You can't be doing that. A box to box midfielder for Jose Mourinho means you are back on the edge of your own box as well, and you are doing the ugly stuff. And that's why McTominay right now is getting a run in the side, because he's willing to listen to instructions and do some of the dirty work that probably Pogba not can't be bothered to do. But he knows that that's not his strongest asset. He knows that he has more to offer than, you know, try to win the ball back there. He's creative. He can score goals. And there is still more to give for him in this Man United team. It's probably worked in his favour a little bit that he's had a couple of knocks recently, because it means that he's been able to come out of the side without being dropped, basically. Obviously, there have been a couple of times when people say he's been dropped, but he's also been able to say he's got an injury. I think that before the end of this season, Pogba will have put in some performances that remind everyone of just what an exceptional talent he is. And, you know, people talk about him leaving United. I think that'd be a huge mistake for them to sell him. You know, this would be an example for me of somebody leaving United. He would most likely leave to go to a club in Serie A or La Liga, and I just would expect him to thrive. And I think he would continue to go on and prove himself as one of the best players in the world. So I think patience is needed. I think that everyone needs to be more grounded, because Pogba, funnily enough, is a very good footballer.
Yeah. Certainly is, and he's only 24, so who's to say that he can't...
Exactly.
Even, yeah, I mean, he's exactly. still got years ahead of him. So, Dean, let's move from one polarizing player to another, maybe the most polarizing player, and that is Zlatan. For a player that is always so talked about, even by himself, or maybe mostly by himself, I've almost forgotten about him recently. Do you think we'll see him in Manchester Red again, or is he destined for the LA Galaxy? And if he does go to the MLS, do you think it'll be a successful stint?
I don't think we will see him in a United shirt. Well, we might see him in a United shirt, but not for particularly long. You know, if he's going to play again, it's going to be as a bit part player. I can see why he might hang around, just because United, you know, they have got opportunity to win silverware, and he probably wants to be around that because that's what he's used to. I do wonder whether for the first time Zlatan's starting to doubt himself and how much he can impact the team, because by his standards, he has gone quiet recently. You know, usually you're hearing him talking about him comparing himself to Lions and whatnot, and tweeting about him being close to a return and how he's not human. There hasn't been much of that in the last couple of months. He's been pretty quiet. He's been, you know, training hard and going about his work and trying to get back on the pitch. In the meantime, United have signed Alexis Sanchez, you know, somebody who Ibrahimovic can't get close to fitness-wise. They've got Romelu Lukaku, who's become the focal point of the side. And around them, they've got Rashford, they've got Martial, you've got Mata, you've got Lingard, and they're all starting to come together and gel. And I'm not sure Ibra fits in anywhere amongst that lot, you know, and he's earning a lot of money if he used to get out on the field. I don't think United fans will be too sorry to see him go. You know, I asked the question of them, you know, how would you feel if Zlatan leaves? And, you know, people were grateful for what he did last season. He came in at a time when United needed somebody to take them in a different direction and assert some authority and some belief into the team. He did that. He made a big difference. Jose Mourinho was certainly grateful for what he did. Even when he warms up at United at the moment, you know, he gets an ovation from around the stadium. They do love him. They do appreciate him. But ultimately, I think they know that it's time to move on from him now. You know, Zlatan has been a great player, but he's probably ready for a new challenge. I think the MLS is probably a good place for him to head because, you know, if for nothing else, then he'll want to grow his brand there, so I'm told, you know, and it makes sense that, you know, in any other country, you know who Zlatan Ibrahimovic is, and America's one of the few countries where he could probably go and maybe walk around town and not too many people would recognise him. He might welcome that, but it'll also, his ego will get to him in a sense because he wants to be recognised. He wants people to know that he is Zlatan. And I spoke to some people at Galaxy who don't actually think they need him, and they're slightly concerned that he might affect the team dynamic and it might unsettle the team. You know, on paper, they've got a team at Galaxy that could do well this season. They could really challenge. They need to have a big season, particularly with LAFC on the horizon now and starting the season so well. So Galaxy need to start well as well and really kick on. There's always a chance that Zlatan could disrupt that. When he's been with Sweden before, it hasn't really gone well at times because the rest of the team just are put off by the fact that everything has to be about him. I'm not sure how that would go down at Galaxy. I'm not sure whether he could get away with it still, possibly for a certain amount of time. But once results start to not go your way or you have a couple of bad games, I don't think it matters who you are, particularly if you're in America and no one's got too much allegiance towards you. I think that it could prove difficult. So it'll be interesting. I do think there's a chance he ends up in MLS, but I'd say tread with caution if you were going to sign him.
Very, very interesting. I mean, he certainly seems perfect for Hollywood, but yeah, he definitely would.
Exactly, yeah.
He definitely could mess up.
Maybe a red carpet somewhere rather than on the football pitch.
I'm sure he's fine with that. So, Dean, let's move away from football now. It's tradition for us on Couchland to ask our first-time guests how they got into the business, doing what they're doing. So you obviously write for a very popular site in Bleacher Report. How did you end up covering the beautiful game and eventually end up working at Bleacher Report?
Yeah, I've only been at Bleacher Report for about 2.5 years now. Before that, all of my work was in newspapers, which obviously has been the bigger media until recently. So yeah, I always dreamed of being a newspaper journalist and actually got my breakthrough really early. I was 15 when I did my first match report for the Daily Telegraph. Mm. It was through, I got work experience through, you know, school, you're sent out and people go to leisure centres or wherever else. But I was lucky enough to get a place at a sports agency and I was only there a couple of weeks. And unfortunately, they quite liked me. And you know, surprisingly to me, they sent me out in the second week and I was covering a live game. So I had a byline at the age of 15 and that counted for quite a lot. And that agency stuck by me, really. They gave me a chance. Haters, they're in England and particularly London. They are the most famous and oldest sports agency. And so for the next 5 years, while I was going through college and university, I was getting work through them and doing a lot of match reports and press conferences. That was how I got my foot in the door, really, and then moved on slowly from there to other newspapers and eventually ending up on the Sunday People and the Daily Mirror, obviously on the Mirror website as well, before moving on to Bleacher Report. It was very different back then, you know, talking about, you know, 15 years ago or so. The industry has completely changed since then. I count myself quite fortunate, really, that I was able to experience the real feel of newspapers and what it was like to be out in a pack covering stories and chasing stories, but now coming out of that a little bit into a company like Bleacher Report, who are forward thinking and just try to take the culture of the game and combine it with everyone's obvious love of the game itself and combine all of the different factors that go into why people love watching and talking about football. So Yes, it's a job obviously I love, and I'm very lucky to be doing it, but it's taken me quite a long time to get to Bleacher Report.
Wow, 15 though is when the journey started.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy, yeah.
I was afraid to talk to girls at age 15. That is
something. So was I, don't get me wrong.
Fair enough. All right, Dean, so the last thing I wanted to ask you is specifically for our listeners. A lot of our listeners are aspiring writers, columnists, announcers, maybe even they have a podcast themselves. So what advice would you give, what tips would you give to them on the journey to covering or working in this industry?
It's so competitive now, you know, it's a million miles from what I started off covering purely because of social media, basically. You know, anyone can tweet their opinions and anyone can write their own blog right now and point you in that direction. And it's hard to get a foot on the ladder because, you know, especially as people aren't willing to pay for a lot of the sites. But you've basically got to find something that you can do or that you know that nobody else can, or you've got to be better in one area of the field than other people that are at your stage of their career. So if you're just going in, whether it's that you've been to watch youth games and you know about players that are going to break through, maybe you even get to know a couple of those players and you might get an interview from them when they do break through, when others don't really know much about them, or that player is a bit wary of speaking to other journalists. If they recognise you, they might be interested in giving you that story. And it only takes one good interview or one good story for people to really take notice. And I think that's what people should be looking for right now. They should be looking for, you know, not just writing a match report on a game or trying to analyse a match, because a million people are doing that right now. You need to find something that nobody else is doing, but that has some value. Now, obviously, that's harder to do than I'm making it out to be, because there are so many people trying to do that right now. But, you know, seek out people on Twitter for advice. You know, a lot of journalists now are open, you know, to give out advice. I'm always quite happy to take a message from people and guide them if they're looking for a way to get into the industry, or, you know, asking whether something sounds worthwhile. Obviously, you also need some education behind you in terms of journalism. You can't just start writing a blog and churning stuff out. There has to be some structure and some understanding of what goes into the industry as well. But the other thing, you know, obviously transfers is a big part of my job, and I think that's something that's dying. I think that it's a very old school thing from newspapers breaking transfer stories and exclusives like that. There aren't many kind of early 20-year-olds that are doing that right now, and that's because it is really difficult to do, and it's all about either knowing players or knowing agents or knowing people around football clubs. And again, I would say that one thing that came really important for me early in my career is that, you know, when I started, I wasn't covering Man United or Chelsea or Man City or Real Madrid. I wasn't watching, you know, obviously I watched those games, but that wasn't my focus. I was going to League Two games, I was going to League One games. I was starting watching teams that nobody else was really bothered about. It wasn't always because I wanted to do that, it's because I was being sent to do that. But people don't really do that right now, and there are players out there who are good, who are going to make big names in the future. And if you can be the first one on the scene that knows about those players, whether it's in your country or your area, then let people know. You know, if you know something about a player that's breaking through, you could get in touch with somebody like Bleacher Report, and if you can sell it well enough, then there'll always be a market for it. You know, people are always open to new ideas and new players. So I'd say just really look for avenues that you think you can become an expert in.
I love that. I love that tip on maybe even get to connect with a couple of players and ask them for an interview. That's awesome.
I don't know why, you know, that seems to be a dying art. And, you know, that's what journalists did, and that's what journalism doesn't seem to be about some more anymore. And I think that, you know, people don't, you can still go to youth matches and reserve matches or lower league matches and speak to people. So, you know, if nothing else, do it as practice. You know, it will build your confidence. It will get you understanding what it's like further on the line, and you will get chances eventually to interview bigger players. So, but yeah, I'd say don't set your sights too high at the start, because it is worth the wait when you do start getting to cover those bigger games.
Awesome. Great advice. You know, it's our 94th episode, but you still managed to say something that others have not. So, Dean, I can't thank you enough for joining me on Couch of Land. I know I can speak for David saying we'd love to have you back on again, maybe a little bit before the World Cup. So thank you so much for joining me on Couch of Land.
Cool. No worries. You guys keep up the good work as well. Enjoy it.